Hello and welcome. We're going to jump into our case tonight on our unit with respect to contract and interpretations. Remember, we did the statute of frauds. 1 year contract has to be in writing, always should be, but when does it have to be? The statute of frauds prescribes that and has since 1677. And we talked about the parole evidence rule, which is an aspect of when you do have a written contract that the courts don't want to contradict that contract by bringing in extraneous evidence to contradict it or oral testimony to contradict it. And lastly, we talked about contractual interpretation and how do you interpret contracts. And remember, New York State particularly, and most states as well, want to effectuate the written contract that the parties agree to, that is their final expression. And they do it within the four corners of the contract. They take that written contract, and unless there is a term which is ambiguous, meaning that nobody can figure out what it is, unless there's a term that is missing by means of mistake or fraud or duress or illegality, then you don't turn around and overwrite what the will of the parties is. We want to have freedom of contract. We want the parties to be able to put terms in the way that they want them, the way they understand them, and the plain meaning of those words will go forward. Well, tonight's case relates to that. It talks about how you interpret a contract. This is an arm's length contract. It's a major contract. This case comes out of the New York Court of Appeals and 1956, but it comes out of contract that was negotiated back in 1948. The time is right after the Second World War when New York City was booming. It's growing. Its commercial enterprises are expanding. And one of the largest insurance companies in the state of New York, Mutual of New York, which is a mutual insurance company, which means it's owned by its shareholders, that the policy holders actually are the shareholders of the company. And as a result of that, Mutual of New York was growing rather substantially, and they wanted to create their own new office building in downtown Manhattan. And they contracted with a very famous major contractor who builds skyscrapers, Turner Construction Company, which is still around today. And they turned to Turner and said, hey, we want to have a major new 20-story office building. Today it's actually 26 stories. Back then in the original contract, it was 20, and then they went to 26. But they contracted, Mutual of New York contracted with a major construction company to build this grand new office complex. And if you go, the building is still standing today, very prominent. It's on the Broadway and West 56th Street on the west side of Manhattan. And it's a magnificent office building. It's kind of a landmark. And at the time, they spent several million dollars on this office building. That was a lot of money back in 1948. And they wanted this landmark building built. Well, in order to build this skyscraper, one of the internal parts of a skyscraper are all steel, and this, as we said, was a very booming time in America. So Turner Construction, after they signed their contract with Mutual of New York to build this building, they signed a subcontract with Bethlehem Steel Company out of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, to provide all the steel for this building. And in that contract between Bethlehem and Turner, it provided, because of the fact that you were in such an expanding economy, and steel is composed primarily of natural elements, you have iron ore and other processes that go into make it. It said in the contract that in the event the prices for component materials increased or decreased, there would be a corresponding adjustment based on what the practices were, and it's capped at $15 per ton of those raw materials. And that pursuant to this provision, Bethlehem rendered periodic bills for the materials that were furnished, which Mutual paid with respect to this. But at the end of the contract, those bills totaled $94,000, and they refused to pay them. And they were claiming that they never agreed to this, that was not an identifiable amount in the contract, because that adjustment figure could not and was not given. Now, Bethlehem argued to the contrary of it. They said it's capped at $15. This is customary within the industry to do this. Every single one of our customers has this, because otherwise we'll get wiped out by the cost of the materials if they go up or down. These are products which are commodities, which go up and down with the market, and you have to be able to offset that, because if the prices go down, you get the benefit. If the prices go up, you're going to pay up to that capped amount of $15 per ton. The price increased below that. It was increased by $10 per ton for steel, certain steel items based on the component parts of this, based on that, to the total, as we said, of $94,000. And this contract was sued on, Bethlehem sued Turner, who they had the contract. The reason why Mutual didn't want to pay for it, Turner didn't want to pay for it, was because Turner's contract with Mutual was fixed. They didn't have this in that. They should have recognized that at the time. Turner should have recognized that at the time that they signed with Bethlehem. But this is customary in the industry, because the prices of these commodities do go up and down. And of course, Turner didn't want to swallow the $94,000. Mutual never agreed to pay for that. Their contract with Turner was fixed. So Bethlehem brings an action against Turner Construction saying, you got to pay me this. In the meantime, Bethlehem had put a lien on the building, saying, we already provided the steel, you already built the building, we have a mechanics lien, we have this contract, we want to get paid on it. And the question becomes, is to the Court of Appeals of the State of New York, does the meaning of the term prices for component materials as used in the price adjustment clause of the contract, we require that the plaintiff is entitled to a recovery of the $94,000. The court said, yes, it is. That where there's no ambiguity in terms of the written contract, and the intent is found from the four corners of the written document, they're responsible. Well, how did they get there? Contract language was not an assumption. It was clearly written out. There was a provision in the contract that this material would have a increase in price capped at $15 per ton in the event that the cost of these materials went up. So Bethlehem's cost went up. They weren't going to swallow it. And this was in the contract. You look at the four corners of the document. And the court specifically said that the mere assertion by one of the parties that the contract language means something else to them, where it is otherwise clear, unequivocal, and understandable when read in connection with the entire contract, this is that four corners doctrine, is not in and of itself enough to raise a tribal issue. And it has long been held that the rule of contract is clear in and of itself, that circumstances extrinsic, this is the parole evidence rule, to the document may not be considered, where the intent of the parties may be gathered from the four corners of the instrument. Interpretation of the contract is a question of law, and no trial is necessary to determine the effect of the contract. The defendant argued that unless their viewpoint of this escalation clause had the meaning attributed to it, that the plaintiff had an arbitrary unilateral power to change the price terms of the contract. The court said, no, they don't. It is based on the cost of the raw materials. You have to pay for that up to $15 a ton. You have to pay for that increased cost up to $15 a ton. It's capped. And it shows you that that's it. They can't raise it to $400 a ton more. They can only do it up to $15 a ton more based on the increase. And they would have received a decrease. And indeed, they didn't go up to $15 a ton more. They went up to $10 a ton more. And as a result of that, it was clear in the contract that the contract lacks requisite mutuality according to one party doesn't mean it's true. The contract was valid. The escalation clause provided for increases or decreases in accordance with changes in the plaintiff's regular prices for steel products. The provision didn't give the plaintiff any undue power. All it did was allow them to recoup some of their costs because of increased raw materials. This was found within the four corners of the document. And as a result, no change in the contract. Courts are very reluctant to change anything in a written contract. Why? They want to hold the integrity of written contracts. They want to have the parties be able to have the freedom to contract how they want. And particularly a contract like this, which is between arm's length, sophisticated, lawyered up parties, guess what? The court isn't going to supersede and try and protect one of them. They knew what they were doing. They were awarded the $94,000. See you next week.